Hey, good afternoon, Blockbite. Torvald here. Today we got a great show for you. We're going all around the world. We're going west to east. We're talking about the debt ceiling and the impending liquidity crunch that we talked about yesterday, kind of starting to take form. We're going to cover a bit about stable coins. Tether is now dominant, but we've got some competitors springing up in Asia where we're going to end the show talking about all the new exchanges popping up over there thanks to the clarified regulatory policies they've got set up. So it's going to be a great show, guys. Thanks for coming in, Mikey. Let's get into the show. What's up, gentlemen? How are y'all doing today?
Dude, so I walked out there in my living room to get my Celsius
and my
water, and I start cackling, and my wife goes, "What is wrong with you?" Because I got my earpieces, and I'm like, Corval's cracking me up because I hear you in the background practicing your intro going, and stable coins are the grease that lubes up the piston, and I'm like, what the fuck? And you know what it reminded me of? Beavis, do you remember
when I called you the lube?
Yes, dude. And like you were supposed to come to the other Miami. The first Miami you did come to, and I was going to get this big house, and then the house canceled, and Haley had the idea to get a giant thing of lube and put my face on it and have it waiting in your room for you, which I now strongly regret not doing. I feel like that would have made memories.
And you lost my trophy. It's over.
I did. Well, I did. Listen, here's what happened. Russian horse took your trophy. Okay. Let's be clear.
That's true.
It was boosted by the weave wearing Russian hookers of Abu Dhabi. That's where it was. The concubines of Putin, we'll call them.
So. Say what?
I remember the giant lube with your face on it was that was the plan of trophy compensation. But here we are. Instead we have the beauty of discourse. Which is better than anything you could
get. The beauty of discourse. It's true. He's right.
Yeah. And speaking of discourse, I don't know who that green goblin is. Mikey keeps throwing up on the screen. It seems like someone I should know, but I don't like him, dude.
That's the discourse.
I don't know who that guy is. But speaking of discourse, our esteemed leaders here in the States, your representatives and mine, the Congress, has finally passed a bill through the House. So still got to clear the Senate to be made into law. But they're talking about suspending the borrowing limit until 2025. That gives us two more years of the Treasury being able to just print bonds and sell them.
Okay. All right. So they're not even like it's going to be no limit, like no limit soldier, like Master P.
Suspended.
Like straight up. Hey, Beavis, when you look at Corval, does it look like space is eating him right now? Like he's getting sucked into
a black hole. He's being devoured, which I think he's becoming less and less corporeal over time.
That's what it feels like.
He's slowly becoming kind of like an idea, which I think is good. It's bullish.
That's my ideal, man. As I like it just become part of the narrative, I lose my physical form. Yeah. I can turn off my camera finally.
Do you guys remember that movie with I'm so off topic today. You're just gonna have to roll it. You guys remember that Scarlett Johansson movie where she's like they're like having her transport the blue drugs in her stomach and they break open and she becomes like this mastermind? Like, I can't. What the hell is it? Rose? What? Judy? Somebody watching knows the name of this movie.
Is that
movie
at the end,
she becomes so powerful, she just becomes like mist.
Yeah, sounds like the first episode of Cowboy Bebop, except the lady just dies.
Ah. Always like Scarlett. She was awesome.
Was that the one where they say, like, her she's finally using 100% of her brain?
Yes. I can't remember the name, though, dude. Thanks for tuning in to Block Bites, where we bring you absolutely no information. We're just going to shit talk with each other for the next hour.
I was close to bring up an anime that has the same
Lucy. Thank you. This guy got it. Lucy.
Oh, Lucy. Yeah, that's it. That's a hell of a name to remember.
So cool, that movie, dude. I loved it.
I'll watch it.
I have a thing to show here, too. Yeah. Let's see here. Yeah. So
is that a man bra? Oh, it's a gun holster.
This is all the ads that it pushes to me is a curvaceous woman and I love my husband.
I'm not needing another Celsius today. I'm going to tell y'all right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So they passed the bill through the House, but still got to clear the Senate to be made into law to give them the Treasury, the blank check they need to just print and sell bonds as much as they like. Right. The market is a little conflicted though. You're seeing that the market likes the certainty of, you know, U.S. isn't going to default on their debts, so we're not going to be completely blown the fuck out in terms of all the money being evaporated. But risk assets like crypto are not looking too hot. We're still trending downwards because of the liquidity crunch we talked about yesterday. If you remember, I gave a very long, dry speech about how the Treasury is going to have to essentially quantitative tightening is going to resume in full effect. We've had a nice kind of like recovery in the market since the Treasury has been putting money out there straight from their pockets. But since that's going to be reversing, they're just going to be sucking it all up. Now, you like to hear that. But Oh, yeah. So not everyone is super confident, though, that this is going to pass. And here's a very clear example of that. USDC Circle has ditched their treasuries from their reserve fund. They've been sold. Now they're just holding cash. So they're taking a very risk-sensitive position here where they're saying on the very off chance that these T-bills don't get paid or these bonds don't pay out, let's just fucking sell them, dude. Get them out of here.
Corval, question for you. So what's, you know, when more supply hits the market, obviously cheaper for most things. Is that also true with treasuries? Like when more supply, I know there's so many dynamics that go into it. My smooth brain just kind of wants to understand when they start issuing a shitload more debt, does the yield on that debt go down?
Yeah, I think that the Fed prices the debt. So it's dependent on their policy. So like, yeah, like there's going to be more expensive if more people are buying them, but they're going to set the interest rate on them to kind of set the value of like how many, like what do people actually want to buy them? You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah.
But what's key is if foreign parties are going to want to buy them, because if the dollar is strong because there's less dollars in circulation, they may not want to.
China was one of the top three holders of United States treasuries. As far as I recall, and that was a lot of like what they were trying to prevent with the BTFP, the bank term funding program, is they were trying to prevent people from having to sell these on market and disrupting the treasury market. But it's very interesting that China, you know, who may or may not be an adversary, I think most people would agree they probably are.
A rival, at least,
holds a lot of these treasuries and has the ability to really disrupt that market. I think last I saw, it was in the realm of like $800 billion, $900 billion in treasury. I'm not sure exactly how much, but it's a lot.
Oh yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, baby. They got a lot. They need them to ensure that they have that U.S. cash flow so that they can, you know, buy U.S. goods, conduct trade with us.
They're buying meme coins with it. All of them.
They could buy the meme coins.
Telling you.
So
I mean, it's like they're just kind of like continuously rugging liquidity, and then the consequences came up and they were like, okay, we're just going to like immediately remedy the consequences and undo all the work. And now they're just going to continue rugging liquidity again. And now like the market is a big shitcoin. And I guess like the problem is less so that, you know, this is where liquidity is at, this is where XYZ is at, but more so that like, you know, the valuations of everything got pumped up for a decade, you know, to the absolute extreme. So now we have these massive FDVs. I guess if looking at it from a crypto perspective, you have these massive FDVs, you have thinning books because liquidity is getting more and more expensive and people can't afford to provide it to these systems. Mm-hmm. And now we get to a point where, you know, all for the past 10 years, the playbook of investment firms, at least in like the zero to IPO stage, is let's just like progressively like get to a point where we can just dump, you know, one tier ahead of us. And now we have like all these Robinhood investors holding the bag of these like giant, like, you know, like 20x overvalued assets. And what happens, I guess, like, is this just rugging like money from middle class investors? Is this just rugging money from, you know, low information people? Like, I can't see the consequences to this being anything but the middle class getting absolutely like turbo nuked.
That's always the consequence.
Yeah, it generally seems to be the what happens regardless is the middle class gets nuked. I don't have a visual for this, but I was listening to a podcast on this yesterday about the credit markets being really messed up. I think primarily what we'll see as tightening happens again, credit is going to be a lot harder to get for smaller to medium-sized businesses that are just going to start like failing. So like you're saying, middle-class people, you know, a guy that owns like a tire shop or whatever, he has like a little bit of a liquidity crunch, a couple of months of bad sales, he can't finance, and it's fucking business is gone. We're going to see that kind of ramping up. But kind of what you're talking about, Beavis, is like those super high tech valuations. I think kind of what they want to do, but it's such a blunt instrument, it just hits the whole economy, is that ideally what you would see is like which of these things that we've pumped the value up so insanely actually can produce value now. Like we're,
every company becomes their own hedge fund. Like A16Z's whole thesis is like, every company in the future is going to be a finance company because you can make a lot more money pumping up valuations and just like leveraging your company. I mean, it's like the people that do it with real estate in Australia, it's called negative gearing. I don't really know what it's called in the US, but you know, you're just taking on more and more leverage and using all these assets to pay for more assets. Nick Dracon has been tweeting about that. Ekthon guy, like the IEP guy, who's doing it to the extreme. Like it's one guy who owns 85% of the stock of this company, and he was levered to the gills, and Hindenburg Research was just like, you know what, we're gonna like go PvP against this guy. And they absolutely decimated his company. And we see with Nvidia, like Nvidia bought the bottom of their stock. They probably knew that this earnings call was coming, and now they're selling 10 billion of it, you know, at these insane valuations. And you know, how much further can these firms, like valuations, how much further can, you know, what's happening in the markets divorce themselves from what's happening in reality? And how does that get bridged? You know, because when you as a company, when your strategy is, you know, people now have Robinhood, so they look at their iPhone, they think, oh, Apple stock, I love this iPhone, let me buy some Apple stock. And they don't look at any of the fundamental you know, aspects of the asset. It's that times a billion right now. And I feel like, you know, regulation isn't a point. And I don't think the answer to everything is regulation, but regulation is at a point where it wasn't really prepared for a reality like this, where, you know, valuations are like almost purely based on, I don't even know, like not fundamentals. But
more like like promise, right? That seems to be kind of like just like on a hope and a prayer is what a lot of valuations are, like speculation.
Promise and excitement. And it's like it's less so like a company, and it's more so like a champion. You know, it's like someone you see going into the arena, and all the people in the Robinhood app are cheering and throwing coins down, except it's on a scale that's like never, ever been, you know, experienced before. And, you know, the only a rational person, the only thing they see happening is, of course, you know, liquidity is going to, if liquidity crumbles, prices are going to crumble, net worths are going to crumble, savings are going to crumble. Everybody's going to, you know, and the whole time things are crumbling, everybody's going to be shouting buy the dip, you know, and maybe we just in exist in a world where, like maybe this is just possible. Maybe this is just reality. Maybe, you know, these inflated valuations, these bubbles can just exist indefinitely. I know there's a lot of theory out there saying that that's the case,
yeah.
But, You know, that's when your only hedge against inflation is the market, and inflation is like, even when the government's like, oh, we're gonna defeat it, like cost of goods, can't buy a cheeseburger for a dollar anymore, you know, you're just going to get overinflated markets, because what else can people do? You know, nothing. Like magic cards, you know, exist in a bubble right now. Like comic books exist in a bubble. Anything that can be speculated on exists in a bubble, because the alternative is getting like a reverse tax on your savings, which is like ass.
The only
Beavis, I have questions. Sorry, go ahead. I'll ask after.
I actually want to hear the questions, because I had a comment. I would probably string it out.
All right, here's the question. So I'm having a flashback of B. Brodamas, right? When he was like, yo, we're levered to the tits. This is really bad. There's systemic risk in the market. Luna is going to take it down. We have problems. And everyone was like, yeah, fuck you. It's a bull market. I don't give a shit. Right. And then 6 months later, we're all like, holy shit, he was right. And I wish we could go. We need to go back and find that episode, because it was really prophetic. But so my question to you is, having said that, maybe it was a year ago, I don't remember how long ago it was, but having said that then and looking at it now, it's clear that we've been through a massive deleveraging event, obviously. It's clear that, I mean, markets still get frothy. There's still like insane valuations for things that do nothing, right? The meme coins or the gambling.
The uber rich class has nothing to do but invest. You don't want to even hear my like VC theories. Like, I've been talking to so many VCs in the past year. It's like, we'll save that for another episode, but go on. Sorry.
but my question to you is, so have we, you know, where are we now? Where are we now? That's really what it is. Because I think, you know, a bull run doesn't kick off. Like, it'll kick off before everyone accepts it, but it doesn't really crank until most people just accept, okay, we're in a bull market now, so it's time to fucking buy, right? And we're clearly not of that mindset of the majority. You know, I mean, obviously there's people that want to time the market and get out ahead of this thing. But, you know, where are we now? Like, when are we going to be at the point to where, you know, we can start planning our yachting trips in the Seychelles, you know, and shit again?
I mean, you know, I entered the world of finance via DeFi, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I was freaking reading Investopedia articles. Right now, you know, maybe I'm just getting out of like the bottom of the Dunning-Kruger curve, you know, trying to march my way up to some level of intelligence. But the thing is, like, all this stuff that's happening is like, we're literally like, you know, something fell from the heavens and we're like trying to investigate it, because no matter what, we are going to be, even if you're a millionaire, even if you're a multimillionaire, a lot of cases, you're going to be relatively low information compared to the market as a whole, and especially compared to the biggest firms, you know. And there are like a couple things. Like, part of me thinks, you know, like super high prices, you know, bubbles are going to exist forever, because it's how, you know, BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, whoever prices the working class out of homeownership, prices them out of anything, and creates like your entire existence is now a subscription economy, you know? And like these super rich people with this money that they've basically taken out of the economy, you know, just sitting on vast hoards of wealth, it's like they can operate on terms way longer than retail, you know. And it's like, as retail is getting crunched and chewed up, and as the middle class is getting absolutely ass beaten, you know, these people are just waiting with a bid, and it helps them to keep valuations high, because then they can keep us paying our monthly dues, you know. And that is a much more sustainable, easier to project business model than just sitting on or holding vast hoards of assets. So, you know, that's one theory of 1,000. You know, there are, you could say, hey, liquidity is, like, the logical thought is liquidity is being taken out of the market. valuations are sky high. A logical person thinks there something needs to give, but we do not exist in a world that abides by logic. We exist in a world that abides by a plan set forth by a central committee, you know, and that plan is like, imagine like you maybe planning for your family, you know, or you planning for your job or your company. You can create these plans and you can execute these plans and you can will them into existence. If you have the resources, if you have the connections, you can will them into existence. So you take inventory of all your connections, you take inventory of all your resources. You can say 6 months from now or 1 year from now, we're going to execute this plan and we're going to take this amount of market share and we're going to try our best. Now imagine if you could do that, but you controlled like, you know, way more than any individual or way more than any firm, you know, way more than probably you or I could even imagine. You just control all of these mechanics. And it's really just a matter of, we're the US government. We need this to happen. We're going to crunch, crunch, crunch the middle class. We're going to crunch, crunch, crunch the economy. And they can't fight BlackRock, you know. They need to play along with BlackRock. And BlackRock is just going to sit there with their, you know, 50-year long time horizons and look at the US government's plan and strategize around how can we use this, or how can we use this to take advantage, or how can we profit off of it. That is the whole point of their existence.
So the idea is the liquidity crunch is going to purposefully crush the middle class so that the larger corporations can continue to profit longer
term. It's not so the larger corporations can continue to profit. Like, I don't think that is by design. I think it's just an inevitability. It is by design to a certain extent. It's like they influence these laws, they influence this policy, but like, I mean, you know, the nature of capitalism, for, you know, it has strengths and it has weaknesses. And what we're seeing now is the weaknesses, wherein if you are super well capitalized, you get to control what happens. And like the whole point of regulation is to ensure that these people controlling what happens are doing it for the better of the economy and the betterment of society. And they're making all this money because they're the best capital allocators. And they're the people that are going to help society. And I think, you know, is the WEF like, you know, eat the bugs, you know, $8 cheeseburger plan? Is that the
it's coming though.
Is that what we as individuals want? Maybe not. And maybe like their plan is so smart and so cool that, you know, we just don't understand it. But
this whole inflationary and deflationary cycle, the cycles we continue to go through, right? They're always just a crushing of the middle class. The impoverished don't know we're going through it because they're not looking at the instruments that would even lend that to being in your view. And then the rich, they're already hedged. You know, they're already sitting where they need to be, right? And they have the tools available to them to be able to do that. And so, and I don't even know what makes up the middle class these days. Probably a lot different than it did, you know, two decades ago. But like, it seems it's almost like, you know, they dangle the carrot just long enough and then come back, put the baby powder, you know, a little baby powder on the back of your hand, and they bitch slap you.
to me, it's like, you know, the way that you maintain a super high quality of life in a technology-driven, service-based society like the U.S., one, you need to oppress the world. You need to suck value out of the rest of the world. The US dollar is the ultimate vehicle for that. It's just reality. Okay. Number two, every society that enjoyed high quality of life had a slave class, you know, and we live in an information age where none of us, no middle class person is going to be like, oh, you know, I'll be a slave. I'll be your slave. Awesome. you know, so really like, the reality, like what these people, the level these people are operating on to continue this quality of life is push tech to the limit wherein you can increase quality of life for cheaper and cheaper, you know, and like the only way you can maintain that or maintain balance is just suck more and more and more money out, make quality of life improvements cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. You know, we can 3D print houses. We can make an Xbox for $20. You know, you can grow fields of weed or whatever the hell, and keep people happy enough to keep the kind of charade going. And that's just, it's literally just the reality. It's what has to happen to maintain a quality of life that the American middle class has. And right now, like, China wants it too. India wants it too. Russia wants it too. Everybody wants this life. And so, like, we're racing, trying to push tech to the point where we can give everybody a good quality of life. But also we need balance in the economy. Not everybody can be rich. Otherwise, the world will turn into dust. So it's just a constant push and pull of people being like, I want quality of life, and firms being like, everybody can't have quality of life. So, you know, we're just going to manipulate the economy and hope it works out. And it's worked out.
What was the topic again? What the fuck were we talking about at the beginning of this?
But this is much more interesting. Yeah, I think you're right, Beavis, but I think you're pretty much describing like the purpose of, I don't know, civilization.
Yeah, like the whole it's why we're here, and it's how we're here. It's going to continue happening.
Yeah,
you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, we enjoy a better quality of life than most historically have.
The reality is the world needs ditch diggers, and no one wants to dig ditches. So how do you create a system where people will dig ditches and not be too upset about it?
Yeah.
You have to
eventually. Our jobs are all just going to be ad watchers. We're going to be ad watchers and capital allocators. We're going to take the $2,000 a month we get, you know, as our UBI. Mm-hmm. Our job is going to be to watch ads and then select the best company out of all those ads by spending our money. And then through selective evolution, we're going to be able to exist.
That's going to be the first world rich people doing that. The rich portion of, or the middle class portion of the rich portion of the world does that. Everyone else is still having to like work the fields and in the foundries and shit. But like, yeah, you and me will have our government stipend $200 or government mandated marijuana pen. We just sit right in the cube.
Gotta get y'all high so you don't fight back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really just, how can you pacify the working class? Which really means, how can you make them content? How can you make them happy? And you can look at it, I'm kind of skewing kind of negatively, but the reality is quality of life is better than it's ever been in the history of the world. Okay. Sure, there are vast disparities in wealth, but there have always been vast disparities in wealth. The difference in wealth between a king or an emperor and a peasant or even a lord is like way, it's like Elon Musk versus your cat. You know, it's incomparable. And, you know, the fact that we have mobility at all, I think, is a testament to the efficacy of an economic system like this. The problem is it's fragile. It is like really bad for the environment and the world. But we're getting better. It's like we learn from our mistakes. We keep progressing. Technology keeps getting better. You know, we're getting better at producing things. And it's just, it's like full on like sprint to the finish line where we get to a point where like, okay, we can sustainably, you know, have life and we can sustainably have a good quality of life. And it's a sprint that's like knock down, drag out. And if you're us as observers, we're just like, how is it even possible? But
it's moving too fast now for anyone to adapt. Speaking of how everything is moving too fast, you might say that crypto is the next stage of this fiscal control to facilitate this, isn't it?
Or is it the lack of control? I think the lack of control is what makes them hate it.
I think they just haven't figured out how to control it properly yet. But once they figure out how to, and by they, this nebulous they, I just mean any party that can figure out how to effectively use it as a tool.
The Illuminati is who you're talking about. We've gone down a road here. We might as well keep it going.
Anunnaki.
The Anunnaki. Do you see Mr. Clean was talking about the Anunnaki over there?
That's true, dude.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy guy, you know. I believe that things happen according to plans. And things happen according to many plans. There's not even like a vast conspiracy. It's like everybody has the same plan because there's one easiest course of action and there's one most profitable course of action in a general sense. Of course, there are several segments, but things are going to move in the direction, because that's the game we're playing. That's how the economy, that's how regulations are structured. And that's the whole point. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, I mean, crypto, it's like, it will be used as a tool of control, like CBDCs. What better way to distribute, you know, UBI or whatever. as far as like DeFi or whatever goes. But yeah, it's just like, it's hard to figure out like if the direction we're going is the best direction. And there are so many opinions about it. And I don't know enough to make an authoritative, I don't know enough to say, you know, eating the bugs is a bad thing. You know, maybe we need to eat the bugs to maintain this quality of life. You know, I'm not one to say, we need dollar cheese.
God damn it, Justin.
You're going to have to get used to it. They're going to make them palatable. They'll like crush them up, add some sugar.
Dude, they'll make them taste like Twinkies. They'll make them taste like McDoubles.
I knew you were a glowy, bro. This whole time, you accusing everyone else of being a glowy. It was you. I knew it was you.
No. I would like to not eat bugs, you know. Even when we go to fancy restaurants and they're like, "Ooh, we have the best grasshoppers ever." I'm like, "No.
I eat steak. I eat steak. I don't care if the cows fart and it's bad for the
I eat McDonald's. I don't care if it's $3, I don't care if it's $4."
We know China's taking over.
Okay, yeah.
China's taken over. China's taken over multi-chain. They're seizing the crypto environment. They're arresting stablecoin developers. China's the future. You know what they eat in China? In some regions of China, they eat bugs.
Don't say it. They're going to tell you you're racist if you say it. Don't say it.
How is it racist? It's literally true.
They eat bugs all around the world.
Yeah, people eat bugs everywhere.
Not Austin though. Austin only eats.
I'd eat a bug, bro. I'd eat a cricket.
Eat a scorpion.
I got nothing against crickets.
I couldn't handle the crunch. I would crunch and I would be grossed out, and then I would.
I eat only for the crunch. I'm a real texture guy.
I wonder what it would taste like. I don't think it would taste. I don't think the texture would be very good. I feel like a bug would be flaky, like a wing or
something. It's gonna be the soy. It's gonna be the soy society versus the bug society, and they're gonna constantly be at war. Okay, but I'm not talking about this anymore. Corval, take it away.
No, just loosely tying this into what we're talking about in terms of methods of control. So, you know, we've all been pretty excited lately talking about how, you know, Hong Kong's got this new regulatory structure. We got firms moving there. We've got Huobi. We've got BitMEX. We've got KuCoin, Crypto.com, all these places getting licenses in Hong Kong, which is effectively part of China. Well, still technically a separate entity. It's still technically a part of China. And China has recently, as we all know, arrested the multi-chain leader multi-chain, the founder.
Well, hold on, that's still speculation. We don't know. He's just missing. He might have got a girlfriend. Missing. He might have got a bad drug habit. We don't know what happened. He's just not around.
He's just not around.
Yeah.
I feel like I read that he was actually arrested, but I guess he's just missing.
They can't contact him.
No confirmation. Yeah. But one thing we do have confirmation of is the Trust Reserve team was arrested. And if you don't know who Trust Reserve is, that's okay. They're pretty small. They ran a stable coin that was tied to the yuan and a stable coin that was tied to the Hong Kong dollar. Mm-hmm. And they were arrested. And the reason given was not really anything. They didn't really give a reason. But what is true is that the yuan stablecoin was used for foreign settlements of yuan to USD, and then you could bring it locally on shore. Now, what this means is that you have essentially had a way to transact in the Chinese currency abroad that was outside the purview of the CCP, right, of the Chinese government. So they just shut that shit down hardcore, right? And this is kind of what I mean by methods of control. So like, while crypto does provide some kind of a way out, you still see a government flexing its muscles, right? In terms of controlling that monetary supply. The most useful thing a government can do is control the monetary supply, other than like control all the guns. So what do you guys think about this? I mean, we've been saying that Asia is going to essentially save the crypto markets, but it really seems like to me, it's kind of a risky bet. It's not going to be like the free-for-all we all like dream of crypto being. You know, we're still going to have regulation. Hong Kong still got some pretty stringent regulatory guidelines. You still got a KYC. You got to have insurance. You got to have accreditation. Retail can't use crypto in Hong Kong at all. You can't access any stable coins in Hong Kong unless you're an accredited investor. So what do you guys think about this? Is it really that big of a deal for us average retail guys, or are we boned, man?
Look, anything that brings liquidity into the markets is great. Anything that offers some reasonable feeling of certainty to people that absolutely must have that feeling of certainty to be able to transact is great. Anything that moves even the MiCA Act, which is draconian and like not great, is still kind of great because at least they're doing something. And that's really what, you know, if you've got something, you've got a starting point. If you've got nothing, you got no starting point whatsoever. And so I can, especially Hong Kong, that, you know, there's a million ways to read into this, but like Hong Kong has been a financial playground for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's a reason BitMEX was domiciled there. There's a reason that a lot of people hang out in Hong Kong. Many reasons, but so Hong Kong getting this is, you know, it seems to be the next logical step, but it's more than this. Like their banking system is actively pursuing crypto companies. Like not only will we license you, we will give you a soft landing. We will make it simple for you to be successful as a company in our country. That's how it should be everywhere. It's not how it is because people are scared or without knowledge, but I think it's a big deal personally.
So I think it's like a big deal in terms of, you know, providing some kind of clarity here. You see, the argument that we get in the States, so it's, you know, we got this bipartisan, or this is not bipartisan, it is a partisan issue where you have the Democrats saying that existing regulatory guidelines are sufficient. You have Republicans saying we need to draft new stuff. It seems like from my understanding, what I was reading of the Hong Kong stuff, it's a lot of very similar to just being a regular exchange. So it's not that like revolutionary in terms of allowing it. It's just like a much more clear way to allow regulation. And I think we have kind of, Beavis and I were talking about this before the show. We kind of have this idea that like once regulation comes in, or the general idea seems to be like, oh, regulation will come in, it'll clear everything up and things will be kind of fine the same they are as they are. But in reality, it's going to be the same as, say, typical equities trading, right? You're going to need to be an accredited investor. You're going to need to have $500,000 in your bank account in order to buy Poo Poo Coin.
Well, you don't need that to trade equities. You need that to trade in private
trade equities, but
like, you know,
yeah.
But like, you can trade equities as long as you're going through a licensed broker.
Mm-hmm. I guess like the number one thing with regulation is exactly what Austin said. More liquidity is coming into the market. We're not going to see, you know, poo-poo coin go 1,000x. But what we are going to see is we're going to see more bids for Bitcoin. We're going to see more bids for ETH, which will have trickle-down effects into the rest of the crypto economy. And that's like the whole point. It's top-down. You know, you're not going to be able to attract new firms and accredited investors and get them to buy, you know, your bags. But we are going to see growth of the market overall. And this is going to be enterprise growth. So it's going to be slow. But it's going to be at a significant scale, which is what matters. You know, your Uncle Jeff, unfortunately, isn't significant scale. But he might be. I'm not going to make assumptions. But, you know, being able to onboard firms to Bitcoin is great because it gives, you know, whatever whale is trading on BitMEX some exit liquidity. And then he can go, you know, pump some of his coins. And then those people can pump some of their coins. And that's how liquidity flows through these markets. But I guess like regulation, like crypto getting regulated, I think we talk about it all the time, but we don't really understand what it means. You know, it's like, oh, you're going to operate in a compliant manner. Woohoo. People think it's just going to be, wow, now everything's going to be exactly the same or everything's going to be very similar. But, you know, I can do it without regulatory uncertainty. But the reality is like, you know, crypto laws and laws regarding DeFi are most likely going to either mirror or be very close to those governing finance or similar financial analogs. So you take like, you know, some classifications that are really common are a VASP, which is a virtual asset service provider. You know, if you're a DeFi firm, probably in the next 3 to 5 years, you will be forced to become licensed in even like the most, you know, free jurisdictions as a VASP. And you need to receive proper licensure. You need to abide by, you know, proper regulatory frameworks as a virtual asset service provider. And what that will mean for a lot of us is, you know, KYC. It will mean, you know, limits to the amount we can trade. It will be limits to how we can trade. It will be limits to what we can trade. Mm-hmm. You know, your average token, like to put it to you this way, like unless you abide by a very strict set of parameters, your token is illegal. You know, unless you, unless you abide by a very strict set of parameters, you know, people will have to KYC just to own your token, you know, and even if they buy it off of Uniswap, and that's how things are in the US with even like an aggressive interpretation of current regulatory frameworks. And how it's kind of circumvented right now is with valueless governance tokens. It's like, hey, here's a digital asset. We don't really care what it is. It's used to govern the direction of this technology, this body of technology, and what the market does with it is not our business. And you know, we will help facilitate the development and growth of this technology, but it's not our business. But I think what people need to think about, and this is what really kind of helped me understand how to think about regulation and how to think about compliance, is you need to pretend you are a 65-year-old judge who has seen the growth and decline of many, many industries over his career. You sit in a chair, you get a paper about PooCoin. Let's say you read the PooCoin white paper, you know, or let's say you read a paper, let's say you read about GMX, you know, you look at that and you, with all of these, all of your experience, everything you know about derivatives exchanges, everything you know about virtual assets, everything you know about everything, you look at that. Are you as a judge going to think, oh, this is just a decentralized lump on the blockchain? We don't need to think about it. It's not our business. Awesome. And throw it away. Or are you going to use the existing analogs in your head and say, oh, this is a derivatives exchange. We need to ensure that it's abiding by that policy so that we can protect users and have them operate within the framework we've spent 100 years designing. It's like, at least at first, it's going to be the latter 100% of the time. And you just need to put yourself in the body of a judge. And there can be so many smart people trying to convince this judge of one thing or another. And they may alter policy here or there. That's how we got the digital asset distinction, which is awesome. But at the end of the day, like, you know, now there's going to be regulation built on these digital assets, and it's going to be boring. It's not going to be what you want it to be. And, you know, really best case scenario, it's going to be like Robinhood. You know, your favorite DEX is going to be, oh, you know, I log in, I give them my information, I register, and now I can use a DEX. And then you think, what's the point? You know, is DeFi, like, is it efficient enough to replace Robinhood, for example? And I would argue yes, especially on the LP side. Like, okay, now people can engage in yield products and things like that. But, you know, the product market fit of DeFi right now leans toward regulatory arbitrage as opposed to pure finance. And there is a difference between we want to be making financial technology so that we can capture this $1 trillion market, and we want to do reg arb and make $1 million in 2 weeks and throw the project away in 6 months and not really care. Like, those are two ends of the spectrum, and there's plenty of stuff in between. But you just need to think of the 40-year-old judge or the 60-year-old judge or the 70-year-old judge who's actually making these decisions.
Bro, did you say 40-year-old? Because I turned 40 in like a month here.
A young judge.
Yeah, you're going to be a judge.
A young, ambitious judge who's pro-crypto, like the pro crypto ambitious best case scenario judge is still implementing like boilerplate VASP legislation.
So let me make sure I'm understanding correctly here, Bibas. You're saying
in the US,
essentially, DeFi is much more structured right now to making a quick million as opposed to replacing the existing infrastructure. So we're still early, bro.
We're still early, bro. And the thing is, DeFi tech is like insane. The blockchain is insane. The ability to like program these like huge like smart contract like tails and do all this stuff algorithmically or automatically is literally mind-bogglingly insane and has the potential to replace all of finance. But you know, right now, people, it's like, you know, this is a reg arb scheme with a project that exists just like to convince people it's not, and versus like, okay, we're actually making financial technology, and this over here is way more profitable in a way shorter time frame. But the thing is, like, it's not you or I that's profiting. It's the insiders, because, you know, it's the insiders and then like one or two guys almost always. And PayPay is like the best example, or Ben or any of these coins. It's like, okay, let's whip up a foundation. Let's do like the easiest thing possible, the most decentralized thing possible, the hardest thing to regulate, the most like clear cut. This is a digital asset thing possible. And that's why market makers, like, I'm sure every market maker in the world was like, oh, we need to scoop this up because it's going to get listed on exchanges once momentum started, because that is the absolute most profitable thing in crypto right now is regulatory arbitrage. And that it's just like, we're going to keep seeing it. It's like people always get pissed off when they see it because they have FOMO. But, you know, the only way you profit off that is if you are like, so early, like part of the core team or the core team's friends, or very, very lucky. And you just need to like excise that from your mind and realize that for this to succeed, for DeFi to succeed, we need to like understand that laws exist and there are direct analogs in the world, and that regulated DeFi is going to be really boring. Regulated crypto is going to be really boring. And eventually it won't be. Eventually we'll get, you know, Robinhood or whatever, and eventually we'll get you know, people dancing around telling us to buy their shit coins. But for now, it's like very measured, very off risk. They don't want to overextend with their precedents. So it's like, okay, we're going to allow only the most extreme regulated things. Okay, now we're going to allow stuff that's a little looser. Okay, now we're going to do this. Now we're going to do this. Now we're going to do this. And this is in like the big economies. Like, you know, you can always go offshore and just wait it out while countries keep adopting these precedents. But at the end of the day, it is boring and it's a grind, and it's why we're here. But yeah, I guess that's enough on that.
So we've got so right now we're in an, like you're saying, we're in an exciting space where people are just throwing money to try and make a quick buck. But to really get the longevity, where this thing is really going to end up going, where it's really going to go, is super boring, really like insane, not insane, but just like you need to have like a lawyer to do your make sure you're regulatorily compliant. You're going to have to like have big books you're going to have to read. You're going to have to go to school for 4 years. You're going to have to get an accreditation. That's where we're headed. And that's actually the healthiest place to be. But by the nature of the tech, aren't we always going to have, you know, Pepe? We're always going to have Pepe because anyone would just launch it themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. The precedent exists, and it may be outlawed eventually. Like, they may be like, okay, you know, we gave you an inch and you took a mile. We can't have $1 billion pictures of, you know, a frog. That it probably may get regulated out of existence. There may be distinctions made between, you know, hey, this is obviously a Ponzi, and okay, this is a real digital asset. But for now,
I have a question. Question. Can someone call me? Sir. All right. Here's the question. What's the difference between Pepe launching as a meme and maybe somewhere down the road putting utility on the token and a project launching a token to fund development that has not yet happened? They both essentially do nothing. One has a promise of future utility. One might have a guy that does utility down the road, but literally there's no difference, right? And it seems to me, at least from what I can tell, that the powers that fancy themselves the powers, like Gensler and the rest of these fuckers, they seem to only actually go after the tokens that have real development going on. Like the ones that are actually trying to build something are the ones that get targeted.
Yeah.
What is
the deal? Because like PayPay is hard to legislate against. It's hard to fight against PayPay. It's the most damaging thing. But when you're doing like real development, like PayPay, you can whip up like an offshore foundation in 10 minutes on like, you know, whatever the international version of Rocket Lawyer is, you know, pay your $5,000 and let it rip. And that's hard to fight against. It's like fighting it. It's like trying to hold like a slippery bar of soap when, you know, you only have two fingers or whatever. But
I just love that you keep calling Pepe Pepe. That's all. I just love how you're pronouncing it.
PP, I don't know, whatever. But it like when it's like, okay, you know, when we're being serious, when we're engaging in good faith, when we're trying to comply, we open ourselves up to scrutiny, and beyond that, enforcement, and beyond that, regulation. But regulation doesn't exist. So enforcement is just like, we're going to tell you to stop while we figure it out. And really, like, you know, the reason you see them go after that is because it's much easier. Because, like, these are people that care. There are people that are willing to fight. There are people that are willing to have counsel and have opinions about where the regulatory state is going. And those are the people you fight with. Those are the people you can walk into the room and have a negotiation and have a conclusion. Whereas with something like PayPay, something like Shiba or PP, whatever, something like Shiba, something like Dogecoin, it's like pinning that down is like trying to shoot like a fly with, you know, a gun. It's extremely difficult. Borderline.
Want to make an example, right? Too.
Yeah, because it's like Bitcoin. They're like, okay, this is a digital asset commodity, and now it's like you can look at Bitcoin and be like, how can we be exactly like Bitcoin and take advantage of every loophole? And the output is PP Frog or Shiba Coin, and that's why these. I mean, that's why exchanges pick them up so easily. That's why market makers pick them up so easily, because it's not a reg risk to them. It's like, oh, easy. We're just going to ape in. We're going to make it $1 billion. We're going to list on all our exchanges, and we're going to onboard retail and get people excited and, you know, make a few people rich. But the latter, it's like, you know, do you want to fight for better financial infrastructure in a regulatory gray area? The answer for most people is no. And the sentiment right now for a lot of the earlier VCs, like the 2021 VCs, is regret. It's like, you know, we went in guns blazing, you know, ready to do battle. And then interest rates rose off chain and they're like, actually, let's go ahead and retreat and wait until there's more clarity. But
it all goes back to interest rates.
It all goes back to interest rates.
It all goes,
like,
back to the goddamn.
It's awesome. DeFi is awesome when, you know, you can get 11% APR and you know, interest rates are at zero. But when it's actually like time to build and time to create sustainability and things like that, they're like, well, you know what? Maybe we're better off just holding risk off assets or risk free assets somewhere else. Which, you know, like those people are managing risk well, so good for them.
Don't we have to cap this? Like, we gotta cap this at some point, this topic.
Yeah, cap.
I don't even know what the topic is.
Yeah,
like, all I heard was Pepe the Frog. Here.
It's just, I just get so fascinated when Beavis is going off, dude. I'm just following this thread where we're going.
When Clay is gone, it's like when, oh, Gabriel Haynes, that would be awesome.
The two of
when Clay is gone, it's like when the writers are on strike.
Yeah.
and this is like the TV output. Everybody.
There were a few people in the chat asking about Clay. His family's struggling, guys. He is struggling. His families are struggling. If you want to, his family, you know, any kind messages, I'm sure would be well received. Just let him know how much you appreciate him. Yeah. That would be
ultimate.
That'd be awesome.
X1000 respect. You know, he's what, like, he's gives the show a lot of structure with Corval, and now it's just like we get up for the meetings at 7 a.m. and are like, what are we going to talk about today?
Yeah,
and we say something and then I start talking and it becomes something different.
Hey, like, okay. The people love it, I believe. The last topic I wanted to talk about, we didn't really get to cover too well, but just the stablecoin market. It's kind of flat, but we're seeing a lot of stories about how Tether is really taking over the market. Tether has always been the predominant stablecoin, but now they're making up 65% of the market, which is a bit concerning, especially when, I mean, my whole time in crypto, I don't know about you guys, I've always heard Tether's a fucking scam, bro. They won't crack open the books for anybody. But
that's what Tether did right. We learned that with the USDC debacle. The not cracking of the books was actually a feature, not a bug.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was actually, they were doing that on purpose to maintain peg. I mean, call it
transparency is a double-edged sword. I think is something that we've learned. And it's like regular people, like, you know, people mm-hmm. who play around in the markets are going to have opinions. And I think like something we've realized is they will say they want something, but do they actually want it? You know, do they want decentralized governance? You know, do they want full transparency? Do they want to see how the sausage gets made? The answer to that question, I think in most cases is no. You know, they just want to eat the McDouble. They don't mm-hmm. care about the bloodshed and the path of torture and exploitation behind it. They just want the iPhone, you know, and, you know, DeFi set out to change that. But, you know, I think we're realizing the same thing every other industry has realized, which is people just want the product. They just want the numbers. They just want whatever the most consumable element of things are. They do not want to know about the battles in the background. They don't want to know about the fighting that it took to get them that product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like, it's the nature of every industry. Yeah. But again, we're getting off tangent. Dude, I switched up my...
We're on tangent. Hey, big shout out to Mr. Got Plenty. Dude, I owe you a mm-hmm. steak dinner. Whenever we meet in person, I'm sure we will. Steak dinner coming for me. Flowers on the way to Clay. Thanks, dude. Very kind.
Oh, yeah, in Florida, awesome. That's like a deluxe bouquet. In California, you pay $80 for a bouquet like this.
Baby. Holy cow. Everything's expensive in California.
Dude,
but yeah, it makes me cry. Just capping off the stablecoin thing, we got to pray that Tether is awesome. It seems like the FUD is never ending for Binance and Tether, but without either, crypto will be not dead, but...
Yeah.
But listen. We have to understand something. Now. By them not opening the books,
mm-hmm.
nobody will have any idea there's anything wrong with Tether until they literally stop redeeming.
Yeah.
Do you know how low their coffers would have to get to stop redeeming?
Yeah.
Like, we wouldn't know there was a problem with Tether until it was gone, which in essence is kind of what you, like, I hate to say it, but it's kind of what you want in a stable coin. Like, you want that shit to be stable regardless of what anything else is looking like. And judging by the profits there, you know, that Paolo is telling us that they have and like all that shit, like, they sound fine.
It's what we already get with our checking accounts, you know. It's,
I mean,
like,
is it? That's what, that was my counterpoint, was going to be like, you know, you could say the same thing about like the bank runs that happen. Like, the reason the bank runs tend to happen is because someone looks at the bank's books and is like, oh wow, they got a bunch of unfunded liabilities in their deposits, and they got too many treasury bonds, so they can't afford to pay. Let's all take our money out. So yeah, I mean, us not knowing what's in Tether's reserves means that we won't know until it's a problem.
I think like
the risk of people causing a problem.
Tether is the ultimate crypto native liquidity gateway. You know, it is how mm-hmm. Binance gets their dollars onto the network. It's how every exchange gets their dollars onto the network, really, except Coinbase. And I think if you look at this chart, which I think is super duper awesome, you can see like the non-crypto native liquidity, which is the liquidity I'm talking about when I'm saying, oh, everybody came in for the high interest because interest rates were low in America, and then they backed out. All of that liquidity is shown in that you know, USDC line. Whereas Tether, it's like, you know, much, much smoother. I guess there are the two hiccups during the crash or whatever, but it's like stickier and it's here to stay. And You know, it's kind of like if there is a guy you don't like, if there's like a heel, for example, but he's the one fighting for you, you know, and he's the one fighting for like your interests, you know, you just kind of got to support it. And I used to be the biggest USDC maxi. I was like, oh, dude, these people are going to bring, you know, US to the promised land and help us get regulation. And, you know, the no fee off ramping is so dope. But really, we're getting to a point where USDC is getting captured. USDC is falling back. USDC is getting routed, which all American firms are. And then USDT is just like continuing the fight. And dominating, you just got to respect that. I don't endorse at this point. I don't freaking endorse anything in the whole world, you know, because everything is just one letter or one enforcement action or one, like, look at multi-chain, you know, one, whatever happened there away from, you know, crumbling. And USDT.
I know what you endorse. I know what he endorses. Do you know what he endorses, Corvo?
Peace and love.
Popeye's chicken sandwich, man. The Popeye's
chicken Popeye's chicken sandwiches, they're inconsistent at my current Popeye's. So I go there less often because it's like a risk. At my old Popeye's, they were good every time. Right now, Peruvian food, I think, is Peruvian food
is lit.
And Indian food are the two things I endorse with my whole
family. Oh, I made another curry last night and it was so good. But hey, let me bring it back here a little bit. We can start to close off the show here now. But I do want to say, like you were saying, everything is only one enforcement action away from complete devastation. And that's exactly how I envision Corval Coin. If I get arrested, all that I want it all to go to zero. And actually, I want every single person to be arrested.
The Corval Coin Treasury is actually together. Just a legal fee fallback. And the second anything happens, you're going to condense all of the cash into a big ball and throw it at the police.
That's right. Have you seen? I don't know if you follow Lindy Man on Twitter, but he said, you know, Ross Ulbricht, he's got 500. The guy from the what was it called? The Silk Road.
Silk Road.
Yeah, he had he has $500 billion in Bitcoin somewhere. No one knows where it is. Some insane amount.
Jesus. He knows where it is.
So you gotta. We all gotta like. If you're a really brave guy, what you should do is you should organize a group of 500 guys to break them out of prison. that's a pretty good return.
$1 billion.
See, they're going to know when he does that, it was you.
Yeah, well, that's Corval Coin's goal. That's in case I ever get arrested, I have an army willing to break me out.
Very, very clear risk and return there. I think you've got a great thesis. I can't wait to see it come to reality. But
I appreciate you guys coming today. Beebus, it's always a pleasure having you on. Austin, missing Clay, but Austin, great having you here too. I hope everyone had a great time today on this show. I think it was great. We were all over the place, Illuminati talk.
Happy
but
Thursday.
I think we got a lot of good information and it was a lot of fun. So be sure to like and subscribe, guys. You know, retweet, hop in the Discord. Tell us what you want to see us talk about. Anything like that, guys. And great time, guys. And thanks again for coming, everybody. Austin, anything to say? Any last words?
Looks like Decentralized is pregnant over here. Congratulations, pal. I didn't even know.
Congratulations, congrats, Decentralized.
Man. All right, all right. Get us the hell
thanks,
out of here.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
Mike,
get us out of here. All right. Well,
you're up, Mike.